It's time for the KBOO Morning News.
Good morning. This is the KBOO Morning News for Friday, March 3rd, 2006. I'm Jim Thompson.
And I'm Chris Andre.
And coming up this morning, this Saturday, immigrant rights groups march in support of realistic and humane immigration reform. The Senate approves the Patriot Act renewal. And in Iraq, Kurdish and Sunni politicians reject the Shia choice of prime minister. Today's Portland weather. Partly sunny, patchy fog in the morning, highs around 50. Tonight, mostly cloudy with a slight chance of rain, lows 30 to 35.
A student column in the Oregon State University campus newspaper has prompted protest by Muslim students who say it's offensive to their faith. The piece, headlined Islamic Double Standard, was written by OSU microbiology student Nathaniel Blake and published in the Daily Barometer on February 8th. The column accused Muslims of expecting special treatment after Danish newspapers published cartoons depicting the Prophet Muhammad. Riots over the cartoons amounted to savagery. Blake said, "Bluntly put, we expect Muslims to behave barbarously." Yesterday, about a dozen students, including members of Muslim and Arab student groups, held a vigil on the campus to protest both Blake's piece and the Danish cartoons. They handed out flyers that stated, "While staying loyal to the main values of freedom of expression that founded this country, we also feel the need to reflect on the values of tolerance and acceptance on this campus." At the Daily Barometer, editors said email and phone calls poured in. Senior editors have met with the Muslim Student Association. No resolution has been achieved yet.
From the Statesman Journal, Oregon Republicans will head to Seaside this weekend for the 42nd annual Dorchester Conference. Highlights include a debate among the leading Republican candidates for governor set for Friday night. That will feature Salem lawyer and former lawmaker and GOP party chairman Kevin Mannix, Portland attorney and former Portland school board chairman Ron Saxton, and state senator Jason Atkinson of Central Point. U.S. Senator Gordon Smith is among the scheduled guest speakers.
In Coos Bay, a company is proposing to build a liquid natural gas facility. The facility would be placed on the property near the Roseburg Forest Products chip pile on Coos Bay's North Spit. More than 100 people crowded into the North Bend Public Library to attend a meeting called to discuss public safety and security issues, the environmental dangers and potential impact of a proposed liquid natural gas holding facility and pipeline on Coos Bay's North Spit. Although the meeting was planned as an informational presentation, it was soon disrupted into a free-for-all, with supporters and opponents of the project trying to shout each other down. Although the crowd had been asked to hold all questions until the presentation was complete, speakers were repeatedly interrupted by challenges and comments from the audience. The crowd at times shifted its focus from the speakers and turned on one another as supporters and those opposed shouted to be heard. Communities opposing LNG sites and pipelines around the country and sites that have been ousted from California shores and locations were represented. One opponent of the plan said, "PG&E is a California company and this pipeline is meant to feed the California market. Just keep that in mind. The people who will benefit from this are south of the Oregon border." Safety was another point of contention, and the possible dangers to North Bend and Coos Bay from a gas leak, an explosion, or a tanker running aground. Opponents countered that there's a danger zone for any LNG site or a tanker, or one of 3 miles the bay runs alongside all three communities in the area, and a large part of each community is located within those zones. In addition, the tankers are a moving hazard. This from the World File out of Coos Bay, Oregon.
Even George Bush is stepping back from the oil brink, but not Vic Alfonso. The Portland Automobile Dealership is putting on an event this weekend celebrating the internal combustion engine in all its dying glory. Hummer owners and their Hummers are congregating at the Oregon Zoo. Many of the animals in the zoo are endangered in their native habitats due to human impact on the environment. Much of the damage is caused by CO2 emissions. The event begins at 11 a.m. this Saturday. The phone number for Vic Alfonso is 1-800-875-2239, and the number for the zoo is 503-226-1561.
March 4th, immigrant rights groups and their supporters are literally marching forth into the Portland streets to push back against the anti-immigrant wave of national legislation and local intimidation. On December 16th, the U.S. House passed H.R. 4437, an extreme anti-immigrant bill that will soon be debated in the Senate. If passed in the Senate, it would expand the definition of smuggling to include anyone who knowingly or not aids or transports an undocumented immigrant. Someone driving their friends to an appointment could be convicted of transporting aliens. It will also make every undocumented worker subject not only to deportation, but imprisonment for an aggravated felony. And furthermore, it will make it harder for legal residents to become citizens. It will also deputize local police to enforce federal immigration laws, despite police opposition and concerns that this will decrease public safety. And finally, it will also create a huge Big Brother-style employee citizenship verification system. On March 4th, Portlanders are going to come together in support of immigrant labor, peace, and faith groups to send a message that we need to be realistic and humane about immigration reform. Here at KBOO this morning, we are trying to get Dan Denver of Portland Central America Solidarity Committee on the line to tell us a little bit more about this action and about some of the issues that we are going to be concerned with on Saturday. Perhaps we'll be able to get that interview later. We're having a little trouble getting Mr. Denver on the line. Right now, remember, it is this Saturday, March 4th, noon, and we'll have all the information about the event at KBOO. You'll be hearing more about it throughout the morning.
In Colorado, about 150 high school students walked out of class to protest a decision to put a teacher on leave while they investigate remarks he made about President Bush in class. The protest came Thursday as administrators began investigating whether Overland High School teacher Jay Benish violated a policy requiring balancing viewpoints in the classroom. Sophomore Sean Allen recorded about 20 minutes of Benish's class during a February 1st discussion about Bush's State of the Union speech and gave the recording to his father, who complained to the principal.
Good morning, Dan. Are you on the line? Can you? We may have the interview with Dan Denver of the Central American Solidarity Group coming up in just a minute. Until then, one of the most prominent House Republicans on military issues said yesterday he would try to scuttle a Dubai-based company's effort to manage U.S. ports. Lawmakers are complaining about the Bush administration's handling of the issue, and the complaints continue to spread. Representative Duncan Hunter, chairman of the House Armed Services Committee, said Dubai cannot be trusted. Duncan has been a solid Bush administration ally. He called the United Arab Emirates a bazaar for terrorist nations and asserted that the United States should not permit DP World to take over significant operations at six U.S. ports. Hunter says, I intend to do everything I can to kill the deal. Across Capitol Hill, lawmakers criticized the Bush administration anew following disclosures that the United States had launched a fresh investigation Tuesday into a proposed business deal by a second Dubai-owned company. Also sparking the furor was word of a previously unconfirmed investigation into a separate transaction by a leading Israeli software firm. Opening a hearing on the matter, Hunter said it was quite remarkable that the administration did not initially undertake a full review of security implications, given that the company is owned by the United Arab Emirates. Hunter listed instances between 1994 and 2003 in which he said the country helped move materials for weapons of mass destruction, such as heavy water and high-speed electrical switches, to Pakistan, Iran, and other countries. Hunter plans to introduce legislation that would require U.S. companies to be the sole owners of infrastructure critical to national security. Yes, and do we have Dan Denver on the line now?
Yes.
Good morning, Dan. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having
me. I've told KBOO listeners a little bit about the action on Saturday. Could you give us a little bit more information about it and possibly couple of the points that this protest, this march, is intended to try to get across?
Sure. Well, a really broad coalition of groups in Oregon, from us, PCASC, to PACUN, the Farm Workers Union, to VOS, the Day Laborers Organizing Project, to SEIU, 503 and 49, are joining together to express to our politicians that, especially those in the Senate, that we need them to vote against the Sensenbrenner bill, which is a really, really horrible, racist, anti-immigrant bill, and is not a reform. It's just an attack on immigrants in this country.
And it's certainly dangerous to anybody that helps someone who is from another country but does not have proper documentation. It would endanger people, for example, driving someone to an appointment.
Certainly. It wouldn't only render undocumented immigrants in this country felons subject to arrest, jail, and deportation. It would make NGOs, churches, anyone providing social services to undocumented immigrants also themselves subject to arrest.
Could you tell listeners what where we're getting together and at what time and a little bit more about the...
We're getting together at noon at Pioneer Square this Saturday.
And so we'll have that information at KBOO, and we'll be focusing mainly on this march and on the issues of immigrant rights most of the morning, I believe. Thanks very much for joining us. That was Dan Denver of Portland Central. There's Portland Central American Solidarity Committee, and we'll go back to the news now.
A two-page U.S. document contains a letter showing that al-Qaeda claimed in 2002 to have infiltrated United Arab Emirates security. This according to the Scripps Howard News Service. It was a warning document that should have raised urgent concerns at the highest level of the U.S. government. President Bush and his entire team initially ignored that information. They rushed to approve a bid by Dubai Port World to build a British firm that runs six major U.S. ports. The document, a letter from the al-Qaeda terrorist organization to the United Arab Emirates government, mainly warns UAE officials to stop arresting al-Qaeda's Mujahideen sympathizers. The second paragraph begins with a potentially chilling boast. You are well aware that we have infiltrated your security. Censorship and monetary agencies, along with other agencies, that should not be mentioned. This document was not exactly a top government secret. U.S. officials could find and read it in the files of various government counterterrorism agencies, and so can you. Just check out the website of the Combating Terrorism Center at the U.S. Military Academy at West Point and peruse the list of unclassified documents. It is the one that says at the top, in the name of Allah, the most compassionate and merciful, followed by a warning title, get the idolaters out of Arab Island, the Gulf countries.
Republicans in the Senate face a difficult but necessary vote in coming weeks to allow the Treasury to pad the $8.2 trillion national debt by another $781 billion. The need to increase the legal limit on the debt has Democrats eager to use the debate to blast President Bush and his GOP allies in Congress for their fiscal stewardship. Treasury officials briefed Senate staff aides Thursday and told them that without an increase in the government's ability to borrow, it would default on obligations for the first time in history sometime during the week of March 20th. That's an unthinkable prospect that would roil financial markets and damage the government's credit rating. Although Democrats recognize the need to avoid a default, they aren't likely to provide any votes to increase the borrowing limit. They're not responsible for the fiscal policies that produced it, Democrats argue, especially Bush's landmark $1.4 trillion 2001 tax cut bill. Under an obscure House rule, that chamber gets to avoid having to vote on the debt limit if Congress successfully adopts a budget blueprint. So after passing the budget last April, the House sent the Senate a $781 billion debt limit as if it had passed it separately.
The Senate yesterday gave its blessing to the renewal of the USA Patriot Act after adding a new privacy protections designed to make the public believe there was better balance between civil liberties and the government's power to root out terrorists. The 89-10 vote marked a bright spot in President Bush's troubled second term as his approval ratings dipped over the war in Iraq and his administration's response to Hurricane Katrina. Following the act, Bush and congressional Republicans said was key to preventing more terror attacks in the United States. Bush applauded the Senate for overcoming partisan attempts to block its passage. The House is expected to approve the two-bill package next week and send it on to the President. Bush will sign it before 16 provisions expire March 10th. Critics held their ground. A December filibuster led by Senator Russell Feingold forced the Bush administration to agree to modest curbs of the government's power to probe library, bank, and other records. Feingold insisted those new protections are cosmetic. Some lawmakers who voted for the package acknowledged deep reservations about the power it would grant to any president. For now, Bush and his Republican allies savored a significant victory. For months, their tough-on-terror image has been tarnished by the revelation that the president authorized a secret domestic wiretapping program. The report in December gave Democrats ammunition for their charge that the Bush administration had run amok in its zeal to root out terrorists. With the help of some Republicans, they blocked a vote on whether to renew the law before the 16 provisions expired at the end of December. And by the way, Oregon Senator Ron Wyden voted for the Patriot Amendment.
Every year, U.S. companies collect billions of dollars worth of tax breaks from states and cities anxious to lure jobs and investment to their regions. Now, a good chunk of this largesse may be threatened by a U.S. Supreme Court case coming up for hearing on March 1st. The suit involves investment tax credit as Ohio granted Chrysler in 1998 to build a Jeep plant in Toledo. The state's taxpayers sued, and in 2004, the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals ruled that the deal violates the U.S. Constitution's commercial clause because it puts up a protectionist barrier to interstate commerce. The Supreme Court won't rule until later this year, but a victory for the Ohio taxpayers would put a major dent in states' ability to offer such tax breaks. States wouldn't be required to recapture tax breaks already granted, but they would have to kill those now on the books and not offer more in the future. Corporate groups and some Ohio politicians counter that states and cities have every right to create a business climate conducive to investment. They also argue that the Sixth Circuit's decision is so sweeping that it, quote, would invalidate a broad range of economic development policies practiced by nearly every other state.
The National Archives yesterday directed intelligence agencies to stop removing previously declassified historical documents from public access and urged them to return to the shelves as quickly as possible many of the records that had already been pulled, according to the New York Times. Alan Weinstein, the nation's chief archivist, announced what he called a moratorium on reclassification of documents until an audit can be completed to determine which records should be secret. A group of historians recently found that decades-old documents that they had photocopied years ago and that had appeared to have little sensitivity had disappeared from the open files. They learned that in a program operated in secrecy since 1999, intelligence and defense agencies had removed more than 55,000 pages that agency officials believe had been wrongly classified. Weinstein said he did not want to prejudice the results of the audit being conducted by the Archives Information Security Oversight Office, which oversees classification. But he said the archives' goal is to make sure government records that can be safely released are available. The audit was ordered by William Leonard, head of the Oversight Office, after he met with historians on January 27th.
Argentina's president, Néstor Kirchner, has urged Uruguay to delay the construction of two controversial paper mills on the Rio-Uruguay border. Residents in Argentina's Entre Rios province, across the river from the proposed mill site, continue to block roads between the two countries. Marie Trigona has more from Buenos Aires.
Uruguay today formally rejected a plea by Argentine President Néstor Kirchner to temporarily halt construction of two pulp mills near the common border. In a speech made yesterday to open the legislative year in Congress, Kirchner asked Uruguayan President Tabaré Vázquez for 90 days to allow time for further studies on environmental risks. The planned mills, to be built by Finland's Metsä Botnia and Spain's Ence, have sparked environmental concerns, protests, and a deep diplomatic crisis between the neighbors. Uruguay has dismissed charges that the installations of two major wood pulp plants would pollute Argentina's river coast, a sensitive farming and tourist area. Uruguayan officials have said protest actions blocking travel and trade have negatively affected Uruguay's economy. Argentina has announced the possibility of taking the case to the International Court of Justice in The Hague. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Marie Trigona from Buenos Aires.
U.S. lawmakers cautioned yesterday that an agreement to share U.S. civilian nuclear technology with India still faces obstacles in Congress. Many legislators, as well as ordinary citizens, worry it could undermine efforts to stop nuclear proliferation. President Bush and Indian Prime Minister agreed to the plan's details. Lawmakers from both political parties said they would wait for the Bush administration to argue its case before deciding whether to vote for nuclear shipments to India. What lawmakers must either change or approve an exception to the U.S. law that bans civilian nuclear cooperation with countries that have not submitted to full nuclear inspections. India has refused to sign the International Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty, and some fear the Bush plan could allow rogue countries outside the treaty to build nuclear weapons programs with imported civilian nuclear technology.
Anti-U.S. protests erupted across Pakistan earlier today, with crowds burning American flags, chanting death to Bush, and scuffling with police shortly before the U.S. president was to arrive for a two-day visit. Police in the southern city of Karachi used tear gas and batons to stop about 1,000 demonstrators from marching on the U.S. consulate. The stone-throwing crowd came within 200 yards from the building. Hundreds of police just outside the capital, Islamabad, swung batons as they dispersed about 1,000 protesters on a major road in the city of Rawalpindi, about 5 miles from where President Bush's plane was expected to land. A deadly explosion yesterday was a chilling reminder of the security risks in this volatile country. A suicide bomber rammed his car into an American diplomat's vehicle in the southern city of Karachi, killing the envoy and his Pakistani driver. A paramilitary guard and an unidentified woman also died, and more than 50 were injured.
Russia's foreign minister said today that Hamas will have no future if the Palestinian militant group fails to transform itself into a political party. Sergei Lavrov made the statement ahead of his talks with a Hamas delegation that arrived in Moscow on a groundbreaking visit. He told foreign reporters, quote, "I don't think Hamas will have any future if Hamas doesn't change." He said that after its election to the Palestinian parliament, Hamas needed to transform itself into a political party and be sure that the military wing of Hamas become a legitimate part of the Palestinian security structures. Lavrov is scheduled to receive Hamas' exiled political leader, Khaled Mashal, in the militant group's highest-profile foreign visit since winning Palestinian parliamentary elections in January.
China's government is detaining people protesting problems ranging from poor health care to property seizures as its ceremonial parliament prepares to open its annual session. Thousands of people visit Beijing each year during the 10-day legislative session, hoping to air complaints about corruption and other problems. Police routinely detain them and send them home. This year, those detained or warned ahead of the parliamentary session, which begins Sunday, include AIDS patients who want better medical care and people who have petitioned the government over the loss of their homes for redevelopment. Liu Qingchuan, an activist who has complained about homes being demolished without proper compensation, was sent home to Shanghai from Beijing and forced into a mental hospital. In addition, 10 people from the central province of Henan say they were infected with the AIDS virus by an unsanitary blood-buying industry have been warned by police to stay away from the capital. The practice has continued in the communist era despite the government's creation of a nationwide network of complaint offices that are supposed to hear and resolve grievances. In many cases, people complain that local officials try to suppress embarrassing information, but the central government also takes part in the suppression of complaints, organizing police throughout China to collect detained petitioners in Beijing and return them to their homelands, sometimes by the busload.
The Shia choice for prime minister has been rejected by Kurds and Sunnis for failing to halt the bloodshed. Hopes that a government of national unity could quickly defuse conflict between Iraq's ethnic groups and prepare the way for the early withdrawal of U.S. and British troops were thrown into doubt yesterday after Kurdish and Sunni politicians rejected the majority Shia bloc's choice of prime minister. Ibrahim Jafari has been blamed for failing to provide the leadership necessary to bring the past week's mayhem under control. His competence after nearly a year as prime minister had already been widely questioned, and he had been accused of permitting Shia death squads to operate within uniformed security forces. Jafari responded to the calls for him to go by canceling a meeting that had been arranged to revive stalled talks to form the new government. If the process of government formation collapses over the issue of Mr. Jafari, American hopes of stabilizing Iraq and reducing troop numbers will recede further after they were called into question by the turmoil of the past week.
Polls show that Americans know more about the Simpsons television program than the U.S. Constitution's First Amendment. Only one in four could name more than one of the five freedoms it upholds, but more than half could name at least two members of the Simpson family. About one in five thought the right to own a pet was one of the freedoms. A new museum dedicated to the First Amendment said the findings showed there was a pressing need to explain one of America's basic laws better. Joe Madeira, director of exhibitions at the McCormick Tribune Freedom Museum, said, "We have our job cut out for us." By comparison, just one in 1,000 people could name all five First Amendment freedoms. The names of American Idol TV show judges and popular advertising slogans also proved more memorable than the five freedoms: speech, religion, press, assembly, and the petition to redress for grievances.
And that was the KBOO Morning News for Friday, March 3rd, 2006. Portland area weather. Today, partly sunny, patchy fog in the morning, highs around 50. Tonight, mostly cloudy with a slight chance of rain, lows 30 to 35. Saturday, partly sunny, slight chance of showers in the morning, highs 55. Saturday night, partly cloudy, in the evening, then mostly cloudy, with a chance of rain, lows 35 to 40. And on Sunday, rain likely, highs 50 to 55 and lows around 40. Thanks for joining us for this morning's news. This newscast was edited by Becca Bartleson and Chris Andre. And Becca is on the board right now. The KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director is Kathleen Stevenson, and I'm Jim Thompson.
And I'm Chris Andre.
Coming up this morning on KBOO at 7:30, Ani and Melody host Positively Revolting Talk Radio. They'll discuss the Sensenbrenner Bill and the march to denounce it this Saturday. At 9, it's APA Compass with a focus on the potential impact of the Sensenbrenner Bill on immigrants. Also hear from participants in Disorient. Participants in Disorient, the first Asian American Festival of Oregon. At 10, one of the organizers of this year's International Women's Day celebration will tell us what's lined up for Sunday at Portland State. At 10:30 on Sounds of Awareness, the topic is the psychological challenges of being the parent of a child with disabilities. And 11, it's Democracy Now! And stay tuned for the KBOO Evening News at 5 p.m. Think you've got the stamina to get up this early in the morning? Well, then come on down and help us out with the morning news. Please contact Kathleen Stevenson at amnews@kboo.org or call 503-231-8032, extension 202. This is KBOO, your community radio station, in Portland on 90.7 FM, K264AA in Corvallis at 100.7, and K220HR Hood River at 91.9 FM. Take care. Bye-bye.
This is Community Calendar for Friday, March 3rd, 2006. This week is Sunshine Week at the Portland State University. Sunshine Week is a national program raising awareness about the transparencies in the government and working to ensure government accountability and responsibility. Today there will be three distinguished panelists who will discuss the importance of an open U.S. government: Larry Tuttle, Stuart Kaplan, and Nigel Yequas. This runs from 7 to 9 p.m. at the PSU Miller Library on the ground floor at 1875 Southwest Park Avenue. For more info, contact artists and writers at pdx.edu or contact Kimberly Wilson St. Clair at 503-725-4552. Want to hear a story and stroll out in nature? Visit Tryon Creek State Park at 1 p.m. today and join a park naturalist for a nature story followed by a stroll through the park. This program is geared toward families with children ages 3 to 6. Tryon Creek State Park is located at 11321 Southwest Twilliger Boulevard. You can call 503-636-9886 for more information. Women of Afghanistan interactive exhibit focuses on the work of the Revolutionary Women of Afghanistan Association and the cultural changes women have had to deal with during decades of war and government upheaval in Afghanistan. These are free to all at the PSU Library from 7:30 a.m. to 7 p.m. Portland State is located at 724 Southwest Harris. For more info, please call 503-725-3000. Reed College's Student Organized Art Festival offers local and national artists and performers at various venues on campus. The public is invited to attend lectures, dances, performances, installation, film screenings, and live music events. Some events charge admission, many are free. Reed College is located on 3203 Southeast Woodstock. For more info, please call 503-777-7755 or visit the web at www.web.reed.edu and follow the links. That was the community calendar for March 3rd. I'm Latoya Hudson. You're listening to nonprofit, volunteer-powered, and listener-supported community radio. Thanks for joining KBOO, Portland, Corvallis, and Hood River.